You are listening to the Gay Florida Man Podcast. This podcast is hosted by retired corrections officer Mark DeWolf, who will discuss various topics prevalent to corrections, gay culture, arts and entertainment, as well as current events. Listeners need to be advised that this podcast will discuss situations involving extreme violence, substance abuse, sexual assault, and murder. Details of actual events have been modified so as to protect the privacy of involved parties.
Welcome back to the Gay Florida Man. This is episode 17. Tonight, I bring you a conversation with a trailblazer, a legend, a survivor. From his humble beginnings in Minnesota to the creation of his larger-than-life persona, Shishi LaRue has overcome obstacles and challenges time and time again to show the world that nothing can stop her. Often imitated, never duplicated, I bring you the one and only Shishi LaRue. Let's start with 1959, and is it Hibbing, Minnesota?
Jesus Christ. Hibbing, Minnesota, yes.
We're Ore and More.
Yeah.
And it's also the hometown of Bob Dylan.
It is. And basketball superstar Kevin McHale.
Excellent. But none of them matter compared to Shishi LaRue. Because I looked.
Oh, come on.
I looked at the list of all the different famous people that have come from your town, and you're definitely on the list, and that's all that matters.
Am I on the list?
You are. You are on the list. Yep, that's pretty cool. I got to tell you. So now, okay, so your mom retail in a clothing store?
She did, yes.
Okay, and dad worked for the railroad engineer.
He worked for the railroad, yes. Also worked, he drove a bookmobile for the public library.
Oh, crazy. That's cool.
He was this cute little Italian bald man that everybody loved and very sweet. His nose was almost bigger than his head.
That's great. So let me ask you this, because I saw in another interview, I've been doing my research, Shishi. I saw in another interview, you talked a lot about your mom being a very strong personality, and you inherited that from your mother.
Absolutely.
That's cool. That's great.
You looked exactly, I'm built just like my mom. I used to curse her for my build, because I have really tiny legs and really tiny arms, and we both carried all of our weight in our midsection, so our torso. Okay. And my mom was Norwegian, and she had big, Norwegian boobs, and she was like this big kind of zoftic woman, and and I guess I was a zoftic woman also. But when I lost all my weight and I had my skin removal, I had to have 17 pounds of flesh taken off of me, and they also had to do a boob reduction on me.
Wow.
Yeah.
That has to be a pretty intense recovery period.
It was, yes.
Oh, my God. Because I have friends that have gone through the reduction surgery and the stomach thing. And I know that one of my closest friends, but she went through the process, and she looks fantastic, just like you. So
I'm so happy that I was able to, buck the system, because 89% of people that have the gastric bypass, they gain it back.
Right. I've heard
and
that.
And I am so lucky that I didn't, because I would never want to go through that again. And, health-wise and clothing-wise and just a lot of, walking up a flight of stairs-wise,
But based on your background and everything that you experienced in life, was it kind of bittersweet? I mean, you've got a lot of change. It's got to be pretty amazing, because as I've been reading your story, I've been saying, you really struggled with the weight stuff as a kid in high school and then, moving away and doing drag. And we're going to get into that, because I've got six pages of notes, Shishi.
Oh, God.
Yeah. No, I want to, before I come into an interview, I want to know everything I can about somebody.
Okay.
So it's awesome. Do you have siblings?
I do. I have, both of them are passed.
Oh, okay.
My sister recently just passed this year.
I'm sorry.
She was only 73 years old, and I miss her terribly, because she was like my best friend, and but she just kind of passed unexpectedly. And my brother, who you know, I didn't get along with. I actually didn't like him at all. I don't think he liked me very much, but he gave me a great niece named Jennifer, who's fabulous. And she gets me, and she had a funky, weird, freaky daughter who's fabulous. And so, yeah.
My niece is going to be on the podcast next week, and we're going to talk about horror movies, the mother-son relationship in horror movies. And
oh my God, I love horror movies.
Oh, you do? Well, do you know what I do for a hobby?
What?
I collect movie props and wardrobe used in horror films.
You're kidding.
No, in fact, the podcast that we did this past weekend, Robbie and I, we talked about Misery, because I have Kathy Bates flower dress when she has dinner with
them. Oh my God. Do you by any chance have the star weapon from Jeepers Creepers?
I don't. I that was filmed not very far from where I'm at in Ocala, the first one.
Yeah.
And I
loved the first one, and I liked immensely the second one. The third one, it was very sad that it wasn't good, because it could have been great, but I'm so excited for the new one.
Right. That's good. I've got from the second one, I've got the creeper's legs
that, oh my God,
they grabbed the guy on the outside of the school bus. And I have several of the students' wardrobe used in part two.
Oh my God. And that's amazing.
And I've got the creeper's teeth from the first movie.
And how sad are you that Neve Campbell is not going to be in the new Scream?
I mean, she's a Scream queen. And of course you want to see him come back.
Yes.
But, I'm disappointed. I think she's great. I haven't met her yet, because I go to all the horror conventions and I try to meet a lot of the people.
Have you met Kevin Williamson?
I have not. I have not.
He's a really good friend of mine.
And oh, really?
Yes. And we talk Scream so much. Scream 5 was something that I was so excited about and was not disappointed. But I haven't gotten him on the phone because I want to talk to him about Scream 6, because, with her not being in it, and the rumor that Neve Campbell is going to be starring in Scream 7, because she turned down Scream 6 because of the money.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were going to say it was money.
Yeah. Well, because they weren't going to give her enough. They weren't not paying her adequately.
Right.
So
she's amazing.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry. We got off track.
We digress. I've seen Skeet Ulrich on a movie I was an extra in Utah. I've seen him in person, him and Gary Oldman. And then Matthew Lillard, I've seen him at a convention, and he was doing the voice of Shaggy for people's cell phones,
I want him to come back as the killer.
I'd love for both of them. Now, was that a gay relationship, those two?
Maybe before bromance was popular, it was a bromance.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, I thought it was so clever how they did Skeet Ulrich, how they did him in Scream 5. How they had it in it. I thought it was very clever. And Hayden Panettiere is coming back for Scream 6. It's amazing.
Awesome. Well, if you ever get down to this central part of Florida, I would hope.
Where is that? I come to Fort Lauderdale all the time.
Okay. So I'm close to Orlando, central Florida. So I'm way up north. Okay. Let's go back to.
Yes.
Okay. So you, was your family religious?
I was an altar boy.
Okay.
I was not really religious, but I enjoyed dressing up as the altar boy and being able to be on stage, basically, when I was an altar boy. I can't really say they were religious. I mean, my dad went to church every Sunday, and I think my dad was more religious as he got older because he was so afraid of dying.
Oh, wow.
And you know what I mean? So he was very scared.
I was an altar boy for a day, but the sex wasn't very good, so I gave it up.
I wasn't lucky enough to experience that.
So now 1975, your first porn, Pretty Peaches, Sharon Kane. Is that correct?
Not 1975. Oh, the first one I ever saw.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm telling you, I'm doing my research.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm like, wow. Oh, yes. I drove my car. See, what grade was I in 75? I graduated in 78.
You're a sophomore, right?
Yeah. So I drove to Duluth and I got into the theater. And I believe it was the Strand Theater, I think it was called.
Okay.
And there was a porno bookstore across the street. It was Duluth, Minnesota. And I went in and I watched Pretty Peaches. And Sharon Kane happened to be in it, who then became one of my best friends for life.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
In high school, you considered yourself the class clown?
Well, I was voted class clown by my class.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There you have it.
I'm sorry. You know what? No, I was not. I was voted most talkative.
I can see that too, but I could also see, because you have a very flirtatious, outgoing personality.
Well, thank you. I'm glad I do. I'm sad that I wasn't voted class clown because I tried to be class clown.
Did you enjoy high school?
For the most part, I was tormented by a couple people in high school.
Bullies?
Bullies, yes.
Yeah.
I got punched in the hallway. it was gross. But I was good friends with a lot of the popular kids. And I did, you know, all the popular, I desperately wanted to be a cheerleader. And I desperately wanted full access to the locker rooms.
Fantastic. Your time will come. Right?
Yes. Yeah.
So you tried college, but it wasn't for you. Is that right?
Well, again, I'm not a school person. Okay. I went to school for the social aspect.
Okay.
You know, and I was involved in all of the homecoming shows and all of the, you know, productions and all of the everything. I was into all that. But I was not into going and doing sociology or any of that crap. No.
Were you involved at all with theater, like stage crew or as an actor or anything?
I was in plays, yes.
Okay. So you enjoyed the acting aspect of it.
Yes.
I did
stage crew. And I would always perform in the homecoming shows. I was also, you know, like nominated for Homecoming King. But I never won because it was always a big hot football player or something that won.
Of course. So shallow. Yeah. That time period of your life. High school was just, yeah, the people are very shallow in high school. They're so sure. Young. Yeah. But you worked in a pizza restaurant.
Yes, I did. Rudy's Pizza.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'm going to have to remember that. Rudy's.
Yeah. And yeah, I worked there for a while. I think a lot of working in pizza places and stuff like that was fed into my weight gain.
Sure.
Because
I
would eat every, I mean, I was constantly eating. I was taking, every time I would put something on the pizza, I would eat some. So it was like, you know, I was eating. And here's a really funny story.
Okay.
I was working at the Green Mill Pizza in Minneapolis. And when I moved to Minneapolis, they used to make crab stuffed pizza.
Wow.
So they had like in the cooler, they had like this like vat of crab meat. Well, I would go into that damn cooler and eat so much crab meat that they were like, we're losing money on the crab meat. We're going to discontinue it.
you love crab. What about lobster? Do you like lobster?
I love all seafood.
Oh, it's great.
I'm a weird eater. I like weird things. Although it's funny because I couldn't stand or I gagged on lutefisk.
Okay.
My mother would make it all the time because she was, you know, Norwegian, and she would cook it. My dad loved it, and it was so disgusting. You know, it was fish. It was a sturgeon soaked in lye.
Ugh. Yeah, that doesn't even sound appealing.
No, and the consistency of it was like snot. But these Norwegian women, they would line up for hours to get lutefisk because it would come in these big vats of lye, and they would, and you had to soak it for 3 days before cooking it. Yeah.
That doesn't sound appealing at all. Well,
no,
I know
it's disgusting.
In Orlando, they've got a place called the Boston Lobster Feast. And it's can eat lobster, crab, shrimp.
Shut up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like $60 a person.
When's that?
Anytime you come visit Orlando, we're there.
Oh. Oh, you mean, it's all the time?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Good to know, right?
Yes. We have the restaurant I live above is called the Smack Shack, which is a lobster restaurant. And they have a thing called crayfish days or crawdad days or something. And it's happening August 6th. Of course, I'm going to be out of town. Yeah. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Now we jump forward to the Strand Theater in Minneapolis, right? An adult theater. You found this theater. And
no, the theater was in Duluth, Minnesota.
Oh, Duluth. Okay.
Yes. Well, I lived in Hibbing. It was a 2-hour drive to Duluth.
I was going to say, and Minneapolis is about 3 hours, right?
Four.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. And I moved to Minneapolis, and that there I had many chances to go to porn theaters.
Wow. Wow. As far as adult film at this point, you enjoyed adult film differently than your peers. When you watch these films, it was like watching Marilyn Monroe. I mean, like the
well,
hair.
It was like watching the stars. It was like I would think of them, all the people in it as stars, and I knew all of their names and I knew their comings and goings. I knew when they dyed their hair or when they.
Any change in their look, and you immediately identified it. You knew right away.
Yes.
Okay.
And I would read the magazines, like the porn gossip, like Cinema X magazine, and keeping up on what they were doing and all that kind of stuff. So I was a sycophant.
You know, it's interesting that like most of your peers are probably looking at her tits and you're looking at like the hair and the wardrobe and what your makeup. That's crazy.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I enjoyed the sex and I thought it was really hot.
Yeah.
But, you know, I loved looking at the straight male actors because they were my types. You know, I liked the 70s kind of Paul Thomas porn look.
Okay. Now, when did you know, like right at puberty, did you know that you were different than the other boys? As far as your sexuality?
I think so, yes.
No, for me, I knew when I hit puberty and like all my friends are talking about, you know, Dulcie or Gina or whoever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, what about John over there?
Yeah.
And I just knew something was different.
I wanted to be, I dressed up like Cher for Halloween. I was into things that the girls were into and I was very attracted to boys. Yes.
Yeah, it's interesting because I look back at high school and I knew at puberty that I was different and I was terrified being raised Roman Catholic.
Yeah.
I was so scared. My parents were so strict. My dad was a Marine. And so I was allowed to watch Three's Company because the character of Jack played like he was gay. And that's not appropriate. That's not funny.
But he wasn't gay, though. That was the whole shtick.
But yeah, exactly. But the thing is my parents were like, anything involving homosexuality is so wrong. It's perverse.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was terrified. In fact, one time I remember being at the mall and I had gotten this this folder that said Men at Work. And my dad had it confused with the Village.
Oh, Men at Work, the band?
Yeah.
And
he had it confused with the Village People because he asked me, aren't they queer?
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's how conservative.
See, I
love
the Village People in high school. I used to carry their records to school with me and play them up in study hall.
My favorite musician is going to come into play here in a minute because my favorite musician was Prince.
Oh, well, yes.
And I know what's coming here in the second for our interview.
Yeah.
1981, you moved to Minneapolis, you go to beauty school, you hated it. You wanted to be the one in the chair giving orders, not the one fixing.
Yeah, I actually moved to Minneapolis. Yeah, 1981. Yes. And I was so in my element being at beauty school because I could dye my hair and put, you know, streaks in my hair and be like that. But I didn't like doing other people's hair. I didn't, you know,
I don't blame you.
Yeah, no, I was not good at it.
But when I read that whole thing about you saying, I want to be in the chair. I don't want to be catering to somebody. I love the quote.
Yeah.
Wanted to be the one in the chair giving orders. I love that.
Yes.
That's a director.
Yep.
You hung out at First Avenue.
Yes.
And if that sounds familiar, Prince and Purple Rain. And when I had read that, I'm like, oh, First Avenue. Absolutely. Prince. Yes. The Time. Yep. I know that.
Yep.
I'm like,
I mean,
that's
crazy. Knew all of them. I knew it was like I hung out with Jimmy Jam and, you know, he dated my roommate, Carolyn. It was like, I knew Jerome. I knew Prince. He would come and eat with Carolyn and I at Rudolph's Barbecue. I was up in it.
I was up in it.
And, you know, I knew Vanity and I knew it was the time of my life that I wouldn't have given up for anything because I was so enamored with Prince and I was so enamored with all, that whole scene, that whole thing.
He had such a unique look that was so incredible. Like his clothing and like the buttons on the pants. And of course he always wore boots and, you know,
I've got a great story if you want to hear it.
Absolutely.
Okay. So one night Carolyn and I were at First Avenue and we were hanging out and Prince came in. He didn't have his bodyguard with him. He didn't have an entourage. But what he was wearing was a blue polka dotted suit, a Northwest Airlines tie, and he sprayed his hair bright orange.
Really?
Yes.
Do you know how much that picture would be worth now?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So he walked around the club and didn't really interact with anybody and just walked around. And then Carolyn and I went to Rudolph's that night, and that night he came into Rudolph's and walked over to us and sat with us and was sitting there in this getup. Carolyn was a kind of girl that didn't have a filter. She would ask whatever. And, you know, she was kind of like, well, what's this look all about? He was like, I just wanted to see how many people would come up to me and tell me that I look good. I just wanted to see how many people would actually look at how foolish I looked and tell me that I look good.
So he was doing it totally as a joke.
Yes. So
he had a sense of humor, I understand, but he's such a private individual. You got to know somebody that most people.
Yes, I'm blessed. You know, I know that he used to go pick up prostitutes on Hennepin Avenue and bring them back to his house. And his thing was to bring them to the house, not have sex with them, but bathe them, put them in a bathtub and have them bathe. And he would watch. And then after they were done bathing, he would pay them and chick would take them back to the street.
Did he do that? This was like something that he enjoyed to do, or he just wanted to offer a service because he felt bad that they were having to be out there on the street working?
I don't know. Maybe he thought he was cleansing them or anointing them. I don't know.
He was a Jehovah's Witness, right?
I don't know if he was his whole life. I don't know.
Right.
He was very into religion and God, and because he had the dirty side. And then once he became Jehovah Witness, I think he stopped singing songs like
Darling Nikki.
Yes. Any of those songs when he became Jehovah Witness. Yes. Girl, I was in Purple Rain. I got to see him.
That is so crazy. Singing,
I Would Die for You and Darling Nikki and Purple Rain. It took forever to film these scenes, but I remember the guitar, you know, when he did the jumping up and then pretending the guitar was a dick and he was shooting, they shot the cum out of the guitar. Yes.
Yeah. So if I were to go back, because I've got a DVD copy of Purple Rain, is there some point where I could actually pause it and see you?
Nope.
Oh, shit. Okay.
But I did have a close-up and I did have a line, and it was because I sat right at the front table in front of Apollonia 6 when they sang Sex Shooter. And I was like right in front, and they did a pan across us and they had us, you know, because it was the original script was that it was a talent show, a talent contest at a club called Taste. There was magicians, there was a sword swallower or a juggler or something. And then, you know, Apollonia 6, and they won the contest. But I believe that the reason why a lot of stuff was cut out was because when Prince saw the final edit, Morris was really, really in it and stealing the show. So he demanded that a lot of it be cut out and have him in it more.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And they cut out the whole part of them in the barn up in the hay.
Oh.
Yeah. That whole it's in the When Doves Cry video for like a snippet of it. But you know, they had a whole thing where they're up in the barn and I think they have sex and do all that stuff up there, but I think they cut that all out. They cut it all out, yeah.
I know that, like, his bike, and I think I saw Apollonia's leather jacket recently sold, or it's offered by Planet Hollywood.
Not the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
The motorcycle was, I think it was Heritage Auctions.
They had it at Planet Hollywood.
Yeah, a lot of the Planet Hollywoods that have closed now, they've sold it because their warehouse, Planet Hollywood's warehouse, is in Orlando.
Oh, do they have auctions ever? Or like
the last time they had a big auction, because they had the Poltergeist Clown, and was at Planet Hollywood in Vegas.
Yeah. But
it was being shipped from Orlando.
Oh my God.
I think that's how I read it. But I know that they had a bunch of stuff from Psycho 4, Mrs. Bates in a rocking chair that was in Orlando.
Yeah.
Freight shipping and all that. It was, yeah. Wow. But Heritage Auctions or Profiles in History.
I wish that I had something from the Purple Rain set. I wish that I had taken something. Or
if we knew then what we know now,
I guess is the expression.
I know, like John Waters. I met John Waters and talked to him for a few minutes.
Yeah,
in Salt Lake City at the Tower Theater. He was the nicest guy, and I told him that I worked in a prison. He goes, "Oh, really? I have a bunch of friends in prison in Baltimore." Yeah, and he loves to meet people by going out on the interstate and hitchhiking. That's how he likes to meet people.
Yeah, he's a kook. I mean, I have
I love him.
I went to a dinner party at Greg Gorman's house with Zach Spears, who was a porn star. We went to this dinner party, and we walk in, and the guests at this dinner party were John Waters, John Schlesinger, Bette Midler's assistant, and Matthew Caulfield from Grease 2.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're all in this at this dinner party, and I just remember being so enamored with Bette Midler because I'm such a huge fan, but she turned out to be a real not nice.
Oh, that sucks.
You know, and poor little Zach Spears, you know, he's just sitting there like he's in this at this table with all these people. And he goes, "You should do more you should do another musical." And she spun around like a viper and said, "Honey, musicals don't make money."
That's too bad.
Yeah. And I was like,
you hear these stories about people when they really look up to a celebrity.
Yeah.
And then when they meet the celebrity and they're so disappointed. And I know a lot of people say, "I don't want to ever meet my favorite celebrity because I don't want to ever be disappointed."
Well, you know what? I've met many of my favorite celebrities, like Cher and Joan Jett and Elton John, and they've all been wonderful. I consider Elton a friend of mine. I just heard some news that he's recording a song with Britney Spears.
Oh, wow.
A duet of Tiny Dancer.
Oh.
Like he did with Dua Lipa for that Rocket Man
thing. Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's doing the same thing with Britney Spears, which is amazing.
That's great. I can't say that I've been disappointed in the celebrity interactions that I've met. For the most part, they're pretty nice just on how you approach them.
Yeah,
I haven't had anything horrible. You know, they've been very nice. But it's also, you know, do you ask yourself, like, when you meet these people, of course, you're part of that circle. You're part of the entertainment industry. And so do you think you're treated differently than somebody that's walking down the street who says, "Hey, I'm your number one fan"?
Yes, maybe.
You know, and so you're part of that industry.
I mean, John Waters, I was asked to the dinner party because John Waters wanted to meet me.
He's so great.
So, you know, I mean, and then John and I became really good friends, and he took me, once he came back to LA, and he took me to an art exhibit with who was the guy that was the crazy one that thought with the typewriters?
Who is that?
Oh God. The one that took a lot of LSD and.
Johnny Depp played him in the movie. Is it that guy?
Maybe. Yeah. But John was obsessed with him. There was an installation at this, museum in LA, and Greg Gorman and I and John went to this, and it was amazing. And I've been to some seedy strip joints and some seedy ass bars with John Waters. He took me to this strip joint in, where the hell was it? Pittsburgh or Philadelphia, where the boys were dancing naked on the bar, but it was a tragic place, but wow. But he loved it, and he just thought it was the best thing in the world.
Well, it sounds like, and I'm going to get there, but when you go to Los Angeles and you end up going to a bar, but anyways, I don't want to jump ahead in our story.
Oh my God, we're not at Los Angeles. We're not even at Los Angeles.
No, we're still in Minneapolis, where our club hosted a contest called Great Pretenders, and you with some friends did the Weather Girls.
Yes.
And won $50, and you continue to go back and compete and win.
Yes. Yes.
And you're
and that's kind of where Prince saw me the first
time.
Yes. Was that, I mean, because I would go to First Avenue all the time. I never went to gay bars. I mean, the Great Pretenders at First Avenue was, you know, I would enter that fucking contest just so I could win $50 so I could eat.
Well, and you still had a mustache at the time, and you would put the makeup was not as refined as it later would become. But you guys were just kind of doing it, but you just said, for the money to win.
Egg drag.
right. Is this where the name Shishi LaRue was born? Would it be this time period once the makeup started to get more refined?
No, Shishi LaRue was, we all the Weather Weather Girls. We called ourselves the Weather Gals.
Okay.
And there was four of us, and we all had to pick a name. We had a little brainstorming meeting one night when we were figuring out what we were going to do, and we all had to pick our names.
Interesting.
It was June, there was a Flo, there was an Alice.
And like Flo and Alice from Mel's Diner?
No, but that's okay. Probably where we got it from.
Okay, because I remember Kiss My Grits.
Yeah.
There's an inmate that I work with who's from South Carolina.
Yeah.
And she sounds just like a Southern Belle.
Oh, my God.
It's fun.
I love
it's
it.
It's fantastic. Heart. Exactly. But she's being very sarcastic. What she wants to
say bless
is
your heart means, bless your heart means, oh, you poor thing.
Right. She's meaning it, and I hope you die today and don't come back to work.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I get along with her really well. She's just joking. But no, okay, so 1987, we finally get you moved to Los Angeles.
1986.
86, okay.
Yeah. I pulled into L.A. with my friend Kevin with all of whatever we could fit in his car, which I don't even remember what kind of car it was, but we pulled in to Los Angeles Halloween of 1986.
Okay. That's awesome. Now, your drag look, you started to really refine it, and that helped your self-esteem, but it also helped you
for
hookups.
Yes.
Okay. Now, there's the seedy bar on Santa Monica Boulevard called the Four Star.
Correct.
And a drag show was hosted by your soon-to-be friend, Gender, who actually sang.
No, that's wrong.
Okay.
No, it was hosted by a drag queen named Erica Townsend.
Okay.
And Gender was also a performer in LA that would enter the contest. Gender and I became best friends.
Okay. And now tell me if this is true. Gender actually sang, not lip syncing.
She sang, yes.
That's awesome. See, because I had a friend.
And we were in a band together.
Really? Now I didn't read that anywhere.
Called the Johnny Depp Clones. We have an album.
Really?
Yep.
You have done it all. This is like my list of all the things as we get closer to the end of this interview. The list of things goes like probably could go for two pages if I actually knew everything you've done. But as far as researching what I know you've done, the list is a lot. I had a friend, Walter, with an exclamation point that ended up leaving Utah and going to California. And he used to do Carol Channing in Utah, and he would sing.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, he was so fantastic. And I
love it.
He was so sharp with his comebacks. You know, when he would do a show and he would go out and talk to the audience and interact, it was unbelievable. It was really an amazing
people person. Love to be abused by a drag queen.
This is true. It's
my
so
friend
fun.
Jackie Beat. There's a drag queen named Jackie Beat who's my friend, and she's probably the best at it that I've ever seen in my life.
Jackie Beat's parody songs
are
epic. And for anybody that's listening to our podcast today, please look up Jackie Beat and look at the parody songs because they're great. They're wonderful.
I saw Daddy Kissing. Or no, wait. What was the Santa Claus one? I saw Daddy Kissing Santa Claus.
Maybe, I would have. It's great. I can't remember, but I know when I worked at the prison, there was a time, this would have been probably 1998, but I worked in a building that had 280 inmates, and I played the song over the PA system, walking around in women's underwear. And
oh my God.
Have you heard that parody?
Walking around in women's underwear.
It. Yep. And I remember most of the inmates absolutely thought it was cool because we're treating them like human beings. We're joking. Yeah. And there was a few that kind of gave us dirty looks, whatever. But
were they the ones that were fucking their cellmates?
they're like, leave my bitch out of this. I wanted, money was an issue. Applied for a salesman position at Catalina Video and was hired immediately. Because you were so versed about everything, about the actors, about the industry.
Yes. I told them about all their movies, and the man who hired me, Chris Mann, God rest his soul, was so impressed at the fact that I knew everything about everything. And William Higgins and, you know, all the the product that they did, that he was just like, can you start on Monday? And I was like, yeah, I can. But it was very daunting because that first year I didn't get to go back to Minnesota for Christmas. So I was missing my family and I was feeling very, you know, but that's
okay. Homesick.
Yes. Yes.
To Catalina video, you started on phone sales and that was kind of just monotonous. How much product do you want? Here's the new product.
Well, it was easy when I would sell things like Jeff Stryker movies, but it was just kind of like, you know,
same stuff over and over. Yeah. Not very exciting. But you did have all the hot models walking around the building all the time.
Oh, I mean, it was like, it was like what you would, you know, at any moment, Jeff Stryker would walk through the door. But Jeff and I became really good friends until we weren't. He would pick me up and take me to work. And we were good friends. We would hang out. We would go out to bars in LA. He would go out with me and people would freak out that he was coming to bars and, you know, and one time he came to Minnesota with me. It was quite the trip. And I was doing lots of drugs back then. And I remember that we had a bunch of cocaine that we had it, and we had so much and we were going to the airport and we had to stuff it down into the seats of the cab.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy times.
Yeah.
You know, I'm surprised that there's not a, well, I think it's just a matter of time before there ends up being a movie about Shishi LaRue, just like Liberace had Behind the Candelabra.
Well, there was supposed to be one and it was about Joey Stefano and me, but it just couldn't get, I mean, there's Chad Darnell, who's an amazing filmmaker. He wants to do it and still wants to do it, but it's just kind of, it's been hard for him. You know, it's to get it done.
Wow.
And he had a lot of, he had Missy Pyle attached to the project and he had Willem from RuPaul's Drag Race attached.
Okay.
And, you know, so it was all in the works and then it just kind of never got, he couldn't get it picked up.
You hear that story all the time with films are on a fast track and then they get off track and then things kind of fall apart. Then they revisit it a few years later. It seems like it's a pretty common theme. You had gone from phone sales at Catalina, then to filing, and then on to the promotion department, soliciting.
Well, I was working in sales and I didn't want to do that. I wanted to be in production.
Right.
So I was moved into being the promotion director for Catalina and sending out pictures to magazines to try to get the boys on covers and you know, just lots of that. And then I started becoming the art director of the photo shoots.
That's awesome. And then from there, that's when you had your first break on directing a dance scene?
No, I directed a movie called, directed a dance jack-off scene for a movie called Hard Men.
Okay. The way I had written it, it was a dance sequence. William Higgins had let you direct it.
Well, they did a dance, a strip dance, and then at the end they did a jack-off.
And so at that point you were probably hoping that that would open up other doors to maybe get your own film or...
Yes.
And it didn't happen.
Well, there was somebody at the company that didn't want me to do it because I think he was jealous or I think he was just threatened by me. And he was like a very large man, a very, very large man. Mm-hmm. And he told me that I would need to lose 100 pounds before I could direct a movie.
But, you know, and everything I hear, like, you know, you're just a fun guy to have around the office and you're just a great guy to be around. And do you think that he was threatened by your personality?
Yes.
Yeah.
I did come back, you know, they gave me a movie called Billboard and I had discovered Joey Stefano at that point. Yep. So, you know, Joey was the star of it. And, you know, and I was best friends or good friends with a man named Tony Joni, who used to paint the album covers for the outside of Tower Records. You know, he would take the different album covers that were the popular albums and then paint them for the outside. And he actually painted a big, huge picture of the star of Billboard. He did that for me, you know, for free, which was awesome.
Wow. At one point, though, you left Catalina. And you'd gone to Hand Video and
In Hand
Video. And you had done a movie that took off called Lesbos a Go-Go. And that was
Lesbos a Go-Go, yes.
Okay.
Yep. I got to tell the story because
okay.
I hired these women. I dressed them up like as 60s, like bouffant hairdos and 60s clothes.
I heard you had the wigs.
I had wigs and I borrowed wigs and had wigs made. And then I borrowed a lot of the clothes from my friend, Bradley Picklesheimer. And, you know, it was just kind of like we got to the place where we shot it. The person wasn't there to let us in. We ended up having to shoot the entire movie in 4 hours.
That's stress. That's
stress. The movie was ridiculous.
But it was a hit, and that's all that mattered.
It was a hit to the gays because it was so campy and weird. Yeah.
We talked about camp and why it is it appeals so much to the gays, like Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Showgirls,
Batman. From the 60s.
Yes.
I love it. Cesar Romero is my favorite.
Oh, dog.
That voice and his smoking, the Latin lover. He refused to shave his mustache. I love it.
Yep.
Now, you said in Naked Fame, it's all about who you know. And it's good that Joey Stefaner knew you because you really liked Joey Stefaner. When you discovered.
Yes, I was in love with him.
Yes. And. Here's the quote that I had read. I was in love and I was obsessed. He knew it and he used it to his advantage. I told him every day, I love you and you're killing me. But I was obviously not his type. I was a fat drag queen. I wasn't a hairy muscle man. He was into a daddy figure. And in the book, Wonder Bread and Ecstasy, The Life and Death of Joey Stefaner, it talks about the relationship with his father that was not a very good one.
Yes.
And
I'm not a really big fan of that book because there's a lot of untruths and they're told by other people, not me. So I'm not a big fan of it, but whatever.
Okay.
But that's okay. I mean, it does tell a lot of the facts about him.
I had ordered your autobiography and it's still not here. So I searched and searched and searched. I mean, because I had
you can get it on Amazon for $2.
It's right now it's in Georgia.
Oh,
okay. It's on its way. I've been trying because I wanted to have all this information before I actually had you on the phone. I wanted to have my ducks in a row. Shishi.
Well, you do.
Yeah. Well, I hope so. And so I want to go in and it's like, in order to have a good interview, make sure you know about the person you're talking to. And I want to know everything about you. I don't want to waste your
when
time.
You get the book, read it. Cause it's an easy read and it's interesting.
I'm excited. Well, I'd already referred to it earlier, but the Behind the Candelabra with Scott Thorson and Liberace.
Oh,
I was mesmerized. Did you read that book?
I did not. I'm not a reader.
Okay. Did you watch the movie?
I did read that fucking book about the guy who lied about being a drug addict and getting beat up or whatever. Or that one that Oprah.
Oh, yes.
What was it called? Something Little Pill or... I did read that one and I was like, it was so fucking good. And I thought this is going to be an amazing movie. But then when they found out that it was lies,
it was all.
Yeah.
I read the one about Anthony Perkins, Norman Bates and the double life that he lived in Hollywood. And it was the most boring book I've ever read. It was terrible. I don't know if you know anything about him, but you know, he was married. He had two children, even though he was in the closet to cater to the studio.
There was a lot of guys in the closet back then.
But he, do you know how his wife passed away?
How?
She was on one of the planes that went into the World Trade Center.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy.
Okay. Wow.
So, you know, you're becoming big time now in this 1989, 1990. Things are finally, all the hard work that you've put in, it's finally starting to pay off. And then, you know, you've got Joey Stefaner and now Catalina, who had, I feel like they had not done you right. But now you're becoming a very, very successful producer because, you know, you've discovered Joey Stefaner. And you were really pushing hard to get him out there and get him some exposure.
Yes.
In the industry.
Well, you know, he made it in the industry. Everybody wanted to work with Joey Stefaner. He was the first, I would say, bottom that actually became a superstar, because when he became famous, he was in the lands of Ryan Idols and Rex Chandlers, mm-hmm. that were the big straight guys that were trade that really didn't do anything. They just got serviced.
Yeah. Yeah.
Joey right. Stefano was the pushy, aggressive bottom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that he was a star for that reason. You know, he moved away. Joey had a very colorful, big life. And, you know, he, you know, was in Madonna's book and, you know, the sex book. And, you know, a lot of people wanted to be with Joey Stefano, David Geffen, and all these different people were, you know, sniffing behind him. And, mm-hmm. you know, so.
The analogy that I use is I had just done a few weeks ago an episode about professional wrestling.
Yeah.
And what Vince McMahon did with professional wrestling, I feel like you did it for gay porn video.
Oh, wow. That's a compliment. He really made them stars.
Oh, my God. He went international.
Yeah.
And you did the same thing, whereas I always felt like gay pornography is the back room and, you know, yeah. we hide everything. And you made it go much more mainstream.
I tried.
No, you succeeded.
Oh, cool. Good.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I can tell you right now, the first time that I had to go to a different county to look at triple X pornography.
Yeah. And
your earliest movies is what I was watching.
Oh, like which ones? Like,
well, you know, when you talk about Joey Stefano and
yeah.
Matt Gunther, Christian Fox, yeah. I think he yep. was, yep. All of those guys.
Yep.
You know, was my.
Tom, who was the boy that was like the cutest? Tom, he was in Billboard, and he was in the Vivid movie I did with Joey Stefano, which was called Boot Camp. I don't know.
Okay.
I've done so many that it's.
How many movies have you done, do you think? I mean, do you know?
I don't, but.
Because for people that don't know.
It's got to be close to 1,000.
Because, you know, you've done straight, gay, and bi. You've done.
Yes, I have. And trans.
And
transsexual. Yeah.
That's crazy. Let me ask you this. 1992, you lost a particular award at an award show. Do you know what I'm referring to?
Oh, geez. Was it Jerry Douglas?
Nope. The award was removed after this year, and it was the biggest bitch award.
Oh, and who did I lose it to?
Matt Gunther.
Oh, yeah. He deserved it.
No. So I'm going to digress for 1 second.
Okay.
He was my absolute favorite. I drove from Virginia into Washington, D.C. to look for his movies.
Oh, wow.
I had a crush.
And he was a good performer, but God, he was a bitch and he was so hard to work with.
Everything says exactly what you just said.
And I was directing a scene in a movie I did called, what was it called? Where it was like a dream movie, Courting LaBeat, or what the fuck was it called?
You've done too many movies.
Anyway, he was doing a scene. He was fucking this kid, and it was like really amazing. And then I realized after about 10, 15 minutes of rolling that I hadn't pushed the record button.
Oh, shit. Oh, God.
And I freaked out because I thought, oh, Matt Gunther's going to be a fucking bitch, and he's not going to redo it, and he's going to be so mad. And I went storming off the set and got really dramatic. So I was like, I didn't push the button. And he actually was like, it's okay. We can do it again.
Wow. So yeah. There was one day where he was actually nice.
Well, him and I were really good friends and we loved each other. But he was a hard to get along with. And he was jealous of everybody. And well,
he didn't like Joey Stefano for sure.
I think he didn't like Joey Stefano because he was jealous of Joey, but he also, I think, liked him. I think that he secretly liked him.
Because,
you know, we were all friends, Sharon Kane and Matt and Joey and Mike Zemanski and Gender and all. We were all a little porn brat pack.
I saw that reference in my reading that you guys were kind of the brat pack, and you had traveled around to different cities, and these guys would dance at clubs and that sort of thing, and you would be up on stage, and
I would bring Matt Gunther with me, and he would be a bitch to somebody, and and I'd have to like tell him to knock it off because he would be a bitch to the club owner or
play nice. You know, want to come back.
Yeah. Yes.
So 1994, of course, tragedy with Joey Stefano, and he couldn't control the drug problem. He passed away. And then in 2000, the book Making It Big, Sex, Stars, Porn Films, and Me, your book comes out, the book that that's in Georgia right now.
Yes.
And I got to read it when it gets here. And then in 2004, you had a setback because you were going to be going to London and you had a medical emergency. Yeah.
A heart attack. Yes.
I mean, that's got to be pretty terrifying.
Well, it was horrible, but it wasn't. I passed out. I was having this weird acid reflux or like this weird feeling in my chest, like I was at heartburn or something. So I was drinking milk and magnesia. I was drinking milk. I was actually on a Vivid set. I was on the set of a Tara Patrick movie. My friend Michael Schmidt happened to be there because he was doing some of the costumes. He had to take me home.
You didn't go to the hospital because you just didn't realize that it was more than heartburn.
No, so I actually went to the hospital the next day.
Oh, wow.
And the doctor gave me an EKG, and he goes, "All right, my friend, you had a heart attack. You're going into the hospital right now."
Good.
Yeah. And then I had a stent put in my heart, and it was, oh God, it was so awful.
But you know, you're here today because you know, you ended up at the hospital, thank God.
Yes. Yeah. I was eating horribly. I was doing lots of cocaine. I was drinking. I was doing terrible things.
Sure.
So, you know, eating, you can't stop at Jack in the Box and get two ultimate cheeseburgers and eat them at 11 o'clock at night and go to bed. You can't do that. Right.
You can when you're 18, but as you get older, that shit's got to stop. And a doctor will tell you you're done doing that.
Yeah.
So in 2006, you were no longer producing films for Vivid because condoms were not being used.
Well, yeah, I had been directing for them for a long time, and the girls, the exclusives, the girls under contract, all wanted to use condoms. And, you know, I was directing, I was only directing with condoms, and they didn't want me to do that anymore because everyone had stopped using them in the straight market. So, you know, I just was like, I can't do that's it.
After everything that happened with HIV, AIDS in the 80s,
yeah,
you made the right decision there.
Well, now we got to worry about monkeypox, for God's sake.
I know, right?
Yeah.
If it's not one thing, it's another. 2008, then you had your surgery, the gastric bypass.
I did.
Okay. And then in 2012, you directed the music video Trouble for
Willem.
Yep, Willem, exactly.
Well, I had directed a music video for Rob Halford from Judas Priest for his band.
Oh, really?
Yes, which was produced by Trent Reznor. It was called I'm a Pig, and you can go watch it on YouTube. And it's I casted all porn stars and people from my club life and stuff. So we did that with the band too, and it was really fun, really fun. Because Rob and I are really good friends. He actually called me and asked me if I would direct this video, and then him and I became best friends after that.
That's fantastic. I'm going to look it up as soon as I'm off the phone with you. I'm going to go and I'm going to look this video up. In 2015, you went into rehab.
Yes.
You had a quote that I think is amazing. And it shows that you're a very open personality. And you don't seem to have any hesitation. You don't get embarrassed. And you said...
No, I want to talk about... Listen, I'm going to talk about it before somebody else talks about it.
It's amazing. If you're embarrassed, you'll never do anything again.
Yep.
Did
I say that?
Yes, that's your quote.
Oh, okay. That's good.
Yeah, it's great. And I just wish more people could put aside their insecurity. You've dealt with so much up to this point.
I'm still an insecure person, but I've tried to better myself with that stuff.
You're doing it right. You're doing it right.
Thank you.
2020, you have this allegation of, you know, the sexual harassment stuff. Has that blown over? Is that done?
Well, it's blown over, but it's hindered me from getting work.
Okay.
And the company that let me go because of it, you know, I believe that they're suffering because the movies are not as good as they were when I was making them. It's, I mean, when you replace a gay director who's directing gay movies with two straight guys that are directing movies and just doing it paint by number, it's not going to be as good.
No, no.
So, it's blown over a little bit. It's still kind of there.
Okay.
But it was a scam. It was a lie. It was a way to try to make money. You know, he didn't make any money. Nobody came forward to corroborate his story. He did have one of probably the most horrible adult blogs, straight up gay porn. They love to bring people down. They got behind him and supported him, even though if you've watched the video, I don't know if you've watched the video of him talking about me.
I don't have any interest.
Okay. Well, he did it naked, standing in front of the camera naked with his big dick hanging in the camera, talking about how he was sexually abused by me. And it was just kind of, you know, he said that I lifted him up and threw him on the bed and did all this stuff. It was like, okay, let me just tell you something. When I'm drunk, I can barely walk.
I've seen a picture of the guy, and he doesn't look like he has a whole lot of body fat. And muscle is
He's little.
He's little. Is he? Okay.
He's a little guy. But yeah. I still couldn't pick him up. I couldn't pick anything up. Right. I can barely pick myself up.
Too inebriated to be doing that.
Yes.
With that whole thing with 2020, my only question about the whole thing is it true that there's no such thing as bad publicity?
Oh, no. There is. It's
okay.
Yeah.
You've heard that expression?
Yes, DG? I have, of course.
Yeah. Even if it's negative, it's still publicity. And I was, you know, I was wondering. No.
I have survived my life in this industry of being so above board and always treating the talent and the crew and everyone with the utmost respect. There's been a lot of people in this industry that do take advantage of people.
Of course.
And, you know, and, oh, you want to be a, yeah, chicky baby. You want to be a porn star? Well, come on over and service daddy on my casting couch. Absolutely. There's that.
Yeah.
But that was nothing I ever did. And I used to kick people off sets if they did anything inappropriate.
Right.
To one of my actors or if a crew member was caught fluffing a model or doing something like that, it didn't fly with me.
That's good. That's good.
So, you know, I was out to protect these people. Nobody should be objectified. Doesn't matter
right,
what you're doing.
Right. I'm sure that it's a lot of stress to be naked, sexually perform in front of a camera and a crew and rolling, going again, change angle, lights. Yep. Oh, yeah, I can't imagine.
You have to be a very strong person and a very confident person to do that. I mean, I used to have an exclusive named Eddie Stone, who was beautiful and absolutely fabulous, but he was insecure. So whenever we would say cut, he had to have a towel right by him so he could grab the towel and wrap it around him.
Yeah. I understand
Still with a boner, you know,
mm-hmm.
He didn't want to be laid out there exposed, you know?
Sure.
So it's just kind of like, I have to give credit and high praise to people that do these movies. The women, you know, as long as they control and make sure that they know that they're the boss, it's not worth it to ever be told by a director or a cameraman or anything that you have to suck their dick in the bathroom before you...
Right.
Before you go, because no,
that's terrible.
Walk out. You need to leave.
I'm sure, though, it's happened over and over again. Unfortunately.
Oh God, yes. Yeah. Are you kidding?
Yeah,
it's probably happening right now.
So let me ask you this. Now we're just going to briefly talk about the industry because we've made it up to 2022. 2004 in Naked Fame, you said that if you do it right, you can make a lot of money. What is a lot of money?
Oh God! You know what?
What?
Judging by my bank account, it's not my bank account. That's for sure. But I don't know. And that statement is probably aged greatly because now, you know, with the inception of things like Just for Fans,
sure,
and things like that, you know, these boys are making their own money. Mm-hmm. And what's funny about it is that it was so big and so huge during the epidemic, COVID, that now it's kind of dwindled down. We can't afford food or gas or whatever. So it's tough out there. And if you've got like 300 guys vying for getting $24.95 a month, there's only a few people that still are making it great with the fans
sure.
stuff.
Sure.
And It's like a job. It's a job.
Right. Let me ask you this. What does a model make in today's standard, like you said? Like, what would be the going rate?
It's anywhere between $300 and $1,500 a scene. Or
a scene.
A scene.
Okay.
Yes. And if you're lucky enough to be like an exclusive with Falcon or, you know, one of the bigger companies, you know, there's boys out there that are making, you know, $2,500, $3,000 a scene.
Okay.
But they're not doing 500 scenes. They're not doing a lot of scenes. You know, it's very, very few and far between.
That was my next question, is in a year, how many scenes do you say the average successful model?
Well, some do a lot because they'll do the $300 scenes. You know, in Florida, okay, there's agent Fab Scout that is a great guy that is an agent to a lot of boys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're the guys that will work for like Bait Buddies, the different sites that don't pay as much because they can't.
Website, the streaming service, like where it's per month, you pay a certain fee to have access. Okay.
Yes. So you do, you know, these boys are making $300 to $500 a scene. And if they're lucky, some of the smaller studios will pay like $800 a scene. I mean, and they're, it always, it's like 2 hours work.
Sure. Good money for
that,
the amount
you
of.
You can't make that at McDonald's.
Right. Let me ask you this, and this is probably a question. Can somebody say, well, I'm going to get my start in the adult industry, then I'm going to get into the mainstream? And the reason I ask that is because of Naked Fame with Colton Ford. People see somebody like Simon Rex. What would advice would you give to somebody that's like, hey, I'm going to start by doing this, make a little bit of money. It's good money. Like you said, it's 2 hours worth of work. But then I also want to get into the mainstream. I want to work with Tom Cruise.
My answer would be no.
Okay. Well, and I'm glad you say that because it's like, if you want to get into the big movies, you got to be careful. Because I know like Simon
Rex.
Well,
there's some big movie stars. There's some big movie stars out there that will hire you to come and have a little night of fun, but they'll never put you in their movie.
Right. I'm sure. What is the future of adult film?
Well, it's pretty sad right now. It's kind of, it's really, really, the days of the big glamorous studios and stuff are kind of dying. I mean, there's really only a few left, like the Falcon, Naked Sword, Raging Stallion, you know, and there are a few others that aren't doing as well as they may say they are. I would say that the big studio days are done. You know, the smaller studios are doing well, like LeGrand Wolf has a lot of sites and his are doing well, I believe. And so is like, you know, Bait Buddies and Mormon Boys and stuff like that. Those are still doing good. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to say because I'm hoping that it's around because this is what I love. I love doing this. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to work at Starbucks and I don't want to work at Pizza Hut. I want to keep doing this. Thank God I've got drag and thank God I'm able to DJ and do drag shows and entertain people with my jokes and on microphones, you know, and I love the adult business and I don't want it to go anywhere. And it seems to be harder and harder every day to keep it going.
You have directed, produced film, marketed actors, performed in film, on stage, written and published books, created your own company, brand, owned retail outlets,
music with RuPaul,
recorded music with RuPaul, overcome addiction, stood up for a community, survived a plague that must have wiped out thousands of your friends and coworkers, dealt with medical issues, and still is flying all over the globe hosting parties. What is next for Shishi LaRue?
Well, you'd think I could have a vacation or something.
A break? Is that what you need, a break?
I do take a vacation, when I do go places to like get away, it ends up turning into work. And I always want to do a gig somewhere or make money. I don't want to just go and lay on a beach and spend money. I want to go lay on a beach or stay in a hotel or go to New York City and have fun. But I also want to do a gig where I can make some money so I can buy jewelry and wigs.
Well, if you ever make it here, I've probably got 40 wigs in the garage because I used to do YouTube videos.
Oh, I love it.
And I'll give them to you. They're yours. Oh,
wow.
Yeah. Shishi, you are a living legend, having fought through so many events in the history of the LGBTQ community. And yet, here you are. I cannot help but think of the Elton John song, I'm Still Standing. Thank you for taking the time to tell your story today.
Well, thank you so much for approaching me and asking me to do it. You know, I've told my story a lot. Sometimes it becomes a little, you know, oh God, not that again. Don't ask me that question again. I'm sure you know the answer to that question. You must have read an interview. I have to tell you that going down this memory lane and talking about stuff, it's kind of nice. And, you know, I miss a lot of my friends that are gone. I mean, I've lost a lot of my friends. I lost my sister this year. I've lost, you know, some really, really close people to me. And some people in the industry that are gone, but definitely not forgotten. And it's just really, God, it's daunting and it's fabulous and it's scary and it's rewarding.
The only thing, and correct me if I'm wrong, the only thing that I want to see is, and tell me if I'm wrong, I couldn't find it. I want a Shishi LaRue doll.
There is no Shishi LaRue doll.
Yet.
No, when I met Harvey Fierstein on Broadway in Hairspray, he gave me a bobblehead. He gave me a bobblehead of him. And I thought, God, I should make bobbleheads.
You should.
But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things I should do. A lot of things, but
there's a lot of things that you've done. You need to pat yourself on the back. You've overcome a lot.
Thank you.
And everybody I talked to said, you're not going to believe who I'm going to interview next week. And when I mentioned your name, oh, like they knew your name.
Well, okay.
That's pretty amazing. And yes, it wasn't ooh or I mean, it was not that. It was like, are you serious? Like,
well, that's good.
That's great.
That's good. I just hosted a bingo in Palm Springs at Chill Bar. I was filthy on the microphone. And I just remember talking and there being this lovely, God, she must have been 80 years old. And me talking about foreskin and putting the foreskin over your nose. And that's called aardvarking and doing all this stuff. And I'm like, and then I looked over at her and I said, I'm so sorry. I can't believe I'm talking like this. And her daughter goes, oh, please, she's dirtier than you are.
She's disappointed. You're not nasty enough.
Right.
You know, when I saw John Waters at the Tower Theater, he was talking about blossoming to a crowd that maybe
rosebudding?
Where the prolapsed rectum.
Yeah,
from
that's
fisting.
Called rosebudding.
He said blossoming. I'll never forget because people were leaving out of the audience.
Really?
And I was laughing, screaming.
How can you go to a John Waters event and have him say something and leave because you're so disgusted?
Because that's Utah.
Oh my God. Well, that's then Utah. Don't go.
I know. But it's so nice. When I lived there, the 20 years that I lived there, it was really nice to go out to LA or New York or some other place just to get some normalcy.
Yeah, I guess.
It was much better. At some point I got to meet you in person and I don't want you to know that I'm coming. So,
oh geez.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully I'll get a gig or something in New York or, you know, where do you live?
I'm east of Orlando. Yes.
Okay, well, hopefully I can get a gig in Orlando
or you said you go down to Fort Lauderdale regularly?
I go to Fort Lauderdale all the time. I'm going to be there
Labor Day
weekend.
Yes, yep, you told me that.
I'm going to be at La Boy and Lit. So I'll be there. I'll be there all weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Well, I'm going to try to make that happen.
Oh, that'd be fabulous.
So awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for this. And let me know when it airs or when I can hear it.
Bless you, Shishi. You are
all right.
You are amazing.
Thank you, sweetheart.
All right.
Thank you so much.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is a living legend. I end tonight's program with the same thing I tell you every week. And that is to be good, and if you can't be good at it. If you're sitting in prison, you're not good at it. Good night, everybody.